Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, I'm here.
Yes, just a second.
Go ahead, take your time.
Okay.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out.
Yeah.
You will not be able to lose yourself.
No,
I just got to do some house. I just got to do some housekeeping. Give me a second. I'll put you in. I'll put you back in queue.
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised.
Good evening, Black Urban America. This is Kenny Jones. We Talk Productions presents Black Urban America, and it comes on every Tuesday evening from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time. On Saturdays, we have Carlton Steve with Provocative Thought. Also comes on 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a program called the Marketing Partnership Program, which helps self-employed and small business owners to have their products and services sold nationally and internationally. Look at what happened this past week with with President 45. I'm going to say 45. You know, the things that he said about black men. So he zeroed in on the NFL and the NBA and the majority of the players in those two professional leagues are African-American men. He called us son of a bitches. That not only degraded us, that degraded our mothers. How dare he? You know, and I just want to say this. I just want to say this before. Oh, excuse me. I just want to say this before I bring on Mr. Bruce Bond. You know, it's really sad that we have administration that encourages law enforcement to beat up thugs. Now, you know, and some people say, oh, you just talk about criminal behavior or what have you. No, when you say thug, what is the first image that comes to your mind? And then a month later, he said, oh, the Nazis was acting okay. They're nice people. And last but not least, we're son of a bitches now. Now, why are you talking about this? I guess the audience said, why are you talking about this? Why are you going off of this? And then, well, I have to make you aware that this man, historically, for the past 40 years, have been saying sound bites of this nature. It's just that he hasn't been privy to it because he's been a local guy. You know, he's a New York guy. But everybody in New York know what he's about. That's why we got prepared, and I was so proud of the young brothers in the NFL and what they displayed this past weekend. Because it kind of scared me, you know, only a couple, handful of guys were supporting Colin Kaepernick, even though a lot of you may feel that he don't deserve our support, now you see why he was kneeling by himself. Silent.
Yeah, that's
why. That's why we got to have programs like this brother is going to talk tonight. Brother Bruce, that's you?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I saw you had to wait a couple of minutes, but, you know, just something I had to get off my chest. It's been lingering on my chest all week. I just couldn't wait to just ventilate about about this human being that we have as president and what you're doing, prepare young brothers for these type of conditions and situations. So why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell about your program.
Greetings and salutations, family. My name is Bruce Barnes, but I'm known as Kaka, K-A, capital K-A, which in Kiswahili means brother. And in ancient Nile Valley, your Ka was your shadow, your physical presence on earth. And so I'm affectionately called Kaka. We want to talk about rites of passage today. You asked me to speak on that and from our experience. And rites of passage programs are not just for young people. In our African tradition and our historical background, rites of passage is a lifelong process. Think about it. When you're weaned off your mother's breast, that's a rites of passage. When you take your first step, when you move to kindergarten, when you go through all the different stages of your life as a youth up into an adult, become a married person, have children, become a grandparent, great-grandparent, all of those are rites of passage, kind of checkpoints in everyone's life. I was having a discussion with a brother about this, and he was just trying to limit it to the young people. But as the process in the image of Sankofa shows us, we should be reaching back. The bird is reaching backwards, grabbing the egg, symbolizing the best of our practices, the best of our morals, the best of our values, you know, and how we used to treat each other when we were in our natural environment. We have to go back to our cultural heritage. That's the only thing that can make us whole. Knowledge of self is the all empowering force of all human beings. Knowledge of self is the basis of all human power. So we all have been we talk about it, we know what it means, a lot of people do, but are we practicing that? Are we reaching back and using our culture, our cultural heritage in a way that can help to unify us? Are we using some of the techniques that Naeem Akbar told us about, and Wade Nobles, about our African heritage and how our community operated? And let's look at those things and see if we can learn from them. So rites of passage is a lifelong thing for all human beings. And when I thought about that and I think about the stages in my life, you know, that I went through, you know, being single, you know, after high school, and then I went to college. Now I'm out in the world, and then I'm married, and I have children, and become a grandparent, a great-grandparent. So, you know, all those are rites of passage. Now, our program, they take many different forms. We had a rites of passage program in the 90s, and my wife was a science and math teacher. And myself and a number of people, some of our elders, the black men got together, and we started our rites of passage in the basement of our local, like, African store. They sold books and fabric and jewelry and, you know, hang out there. So they let us use the basement. So we started off with kids from, I don't know, 5 up to 15 or 16. We didn't have any specific age limit. We didn't have any experience in it, but there's a brother out of Cleveland, but Paul Hill, H-I-L-L. He's written a number of books about rites of passage, and we're in Pittsburgh. So Cleveland is only 2 hours from here. So we went up there, met with him. We read some of his books and heard him lecture a few times. So we kind of had his assistance in putting this together. So we just started, you know, learning as we went. And we used Jawanza Kanjufu's book about African-American history. And we had donors buy the book and sign the book over to an individual youth. And like we always told them, when you are doing and striving to do the right thing, people you don't even know will come to your aid. I said, open these books. And they opened the book, and each one of them had their name in it. Somebody had written to them to donate the book. I said, you don't even know this person, and they bought this book for you. So, you know, everything we did was a teaching tool. So what we found out was we couldn't teach like you do in public school because we only met like once a week, and we only had them for like three and a half hours. And we would do things on the weekends and other nights too, but our main meeting was on Wednesdays. And we found that we couldn't teach like school because, you know, a lot of these young men live in homes of single parents, and they had trouble with transportation. So they'd come 1 week, miss 3 weeks, come 2 weeks, miss a week. So you can't teach a course like that. So what right. we did was we modified our instruction. When they left there, they left with something that they learned that night. They always left with something. Instead of trying to teach a continuous course, teach something that they could grasp and deal with right then and there, and they can walk out of there with that. Now, something the other thing we did, go ahead.
I said something practical.
Yes, yeah, that was much more practical because they weren't showing up on a regular basis. You know, a lot of missed absences, so to speak. You know what I mean? They were consistent, but they'd miss a week or two here and there. So, you know, you can't teach a course like that. We found that wasn't the best way. But like I said, we had the basement so we could decorate it the way we wanted. And so what we tried to do, or what we did, was create a whole different environment than what they're used to. Every photograph in there looked like them. Every picture right. looked like them and exalted who they were. And they understood that when they crossed that threshold, you're stepping into a whole new world. So we burned incense every time. You know, they weren't not allowed to wear anything that any sports team or university paraphernalia. Because we told them, in this room, everything in here is about us and our people. The Steelers have nothing to do with what's going on in here. So you can't wear that Steeler jersey or that Michigan sweatshirt. And
you got a lot of heroes that are African-American, man. You got a lot of heroes that are African-American.
Well, like
sports
I said,
heroes, I'm saying. I said we got a lot of sports heroes that's African-American.
They either turn
take it
inside off, out or you take it off. Now, you can wear a prayer of UA&M.
Right.
We promote us. We ain't here promoting the New York Giants. Now, you can come in here with a South Carolina State jersey or a Tuskegee, but you can't come in here with Michigan. Sorry.
Okay, I hear you. I hear you.
See what I'm saying? That,
yes.
So you got to take that hat off. You got to pull those pants up. You got to have a belt or you can't come in here, period. So you lay, as you know, you set the bar high and they will rise to it. After a while, the kids self-police the rule. We didn't have to say anything. The kids that were there, when they would bring their friends, oh, man, you got to take that off. Oh, you got to pull your pants up. You got to tuck your shirt in. You got to take that hat off. You got to stand up straight. So we didn't have, after you lay the rules down, the kids police themselves.
Right.
Okay, so we created this a different environment for them, and we kept letting them know that you're in a different environment. Don't come in here with that public school attitude. What goes on there is not happening here. So we divided our 3.5 hours into academic instruction, the first hour and a half, and then we took over, the men would take over and do like African history, African-American history, cultural. Have speakers come in, friends of ours that were policemen and all walked to life, come in and talk with them. But my wife, being assigned to math teacher, she would handle the academics. So we liked the fact that the female was still involved, even though it was a male rites of passage program. She handled the instruction. We went all year round. We didn't take off. So during the summertime, she would have academic work for each one of them in their grade and what they could handle, being a science and math teacher. So she would leave, and then we would take over. Now, when we came in, we set up a ritual, a certain ritual that we do opening ceremony, so to speak. We all come in, and every kid had to bring $1 worth of pennies every week. Now, we told them it's not your parents' responsibility, it's yours. So if you don't have the pennies, you got to stand up till we tell you you can sit down. So every week, you got to bring your pennies, and we had an office water bottle, okay? And we dumped the pennies in the bottle. So as soon as they would come in, they go over there, dump their pennies, and sit down and get ready for our opening ceremonies. Now, the penny is power. I would have the smallest kid put the penny on their baby finger.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you can hold that up, can't you? Yes. Does it weigh a lot? No. What can you buy with it? Nothing. I said, what color is it? Brown. The only money looks like us. Okay. Now, by itself, you can't buy anything. If you get 100 pennies, that's a dollar. You can buy something with a dollar. Or maybe you got to get two, but you see my point.
Right.
So 100 pennies been just like a dollar, right? So we required them to bring these pennies. And how I came about this, see, this is what I mean. Every rites of passage program, either male or female, has different emphasis. So this is just our, okay, that I want everybody to know that. You can pattern your rites of passage program if you want to do science and math or martial arts, because we try to incorporate all that. Because we want our women to be able to defend themselves just like the men. We need
in the 90s, where I ran my rites of passage, it was incorporated with sports.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we did the cultural
every athlete, in order to play on this team, or for play on this team, you had to come to, I call it self-image building classes, which come out of Kuju football, Kwanzaa Kujufu book, self-image building classes. You know, twice a week after practice, you got to spend 45 minutes in class.
Yep.
You want to play for the team. And thank goodness we were a winning program.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a gentleman who works with me. He runs a midget league organization. They have five teams with over 400 people all together.
Mm-hmm.
And just like I keep telling them, use their interest in sports, just like what the example you said, to bridge the achievement gap. You know,
right.
These young boys want to play football so bad, you tell them, and, you know, I said, why don't you start out with a 1.0? You got to have a 1.0. And every year, just raise it up, a 1.1. You know, you can't say you got to have a 3.0 right off the top. But, you know, over time, you know, but they need to – we could close the academic gap that way, just like you can get the brothers to pull their pants up if the sister said, I ain't going to deal with you unless you do. That stuff will stop overnight. I'm not putting the onus on the sisters, but I know that that would turn things around, tell you that.
Let me ask you something. Since you brought up sisters, people that are listening, press 1 if you have a comment or a question. Let me ask you something. Do you feel our sisters are way ahead of the game than the brothers? Like, for example, going to school, graduating, going to college, taking care of the community. Do you think African-American sisters are ahead of the brothers?
Well, it depends on what you mean ahead. But you mean as far as accomplishment and achievement?
Start on becoming entrepreneurs.
That's obvious. In every arena. I agree with you.
Yeah. How do you feel? I know what my response is. How do you feel African American young boys and men. Yeah, that's going to be a follow-up question to this. African young boys and men can take over the leadership of our communities in America.
Oh, my brother. Wow. I don't know if I could answer that, man. That's such a broad...
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Because you do it every week. Yes, you
the
can.
Leadership. We don't need leadership. We need workers. We need people that will do the work that has been set before us, which is, number one, to reconstitute our institutions. I don't care if it's male or female. We need to be... We don't need to worry about who's in charge of what. We just need to get it done. And whoever has the skills, do what they need to do and stay in their lane, and we can try to get things done. But we don't have a central leadership. We don't have elected officials that are elected through our own system. See, this is what I mean when I tell you we need to go back to our African tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to Sankofa. Our council of elders were our leaders.
Right.
Your grandmother, my uncle, people in the community that we knew had the best interest of the community, not who could raise the most money for a political election. You see what I mean? So we don't, that system will never deliver anything for us. It's very little. I can't say anything. Very little. And I know personally politicians that are state representatives and city council people that I know personally. And, you know, they can do some things. But that's not our solution. We need to stand cope and go back and grab these best of our practices and put them to play. That's how we're going to solve our problems today. We can't use the system to solve our problems. It wasn't designed for that. So, you know, to answer that question, like I said, we have to come together and develop our own system. And I would say using our council of elders, using our elders with the responsibility to develop an agenda or something. You know, we don't have enough. What's our agenda as black people? When have you ever seen anybody lay out a plan for our development?
They tried to in 1970. They tried to in 1970, but everybody walked out. I think it was in Cleveland. It was in Cleveland in 1970.
It was in Gary, Indiana.
Oh, Gary, excuse me. But you know who I'm talking about, right?
But, I mean, there's been some people who have written like a business plan. You go into the start a business, the first thing they're going to ask you, let me see your business plan.
Right.
Where's our business? We've had these so-called leaders. Ain't none of them. Have you ever seen one written?
Nope.
Claude Anderson is somebody we need to deal with. George Frazier, who wrote the book Success Runs in Our Race.
Mm-hmm.
Claude Anderson, who wrote Black Labor, White Wealth. We need to get with our learned people. Get with our learned people.
That was a good book.
You know, you read some of these books, I know. So we need to take this information and come. It don't matter who's running what. Let's come together. We got to come together. Young brother asked me, he said, "You're killing us, Bruce. What can we do?" I said, "Well, whatever you come up with, if you're not unified, it's not going to work. So it seems to me the best thing to do is unify first. You got to do that, because whatever you come up with is not going to work. Unless you're unified. Like, you see the players?
Right.
You know, I don't follow that stuff too much, but I saw where almost all the players took offense to what, you know, the gentleman
45.
In the White House.
Just going 45.
Okay, I don't really talk about him, but, you know, they all took offense and they unified. Now, no, they didn't strike, and no, they didn't unify like this over Kaepernick, but they did. Finally, they came together, and, you know, they came together. Albert, virtually every team did something. They didn't all do the same thing, but they all did something to show their displeasure. That's unity, okay? So until we start talking about that, you know, we'll never get anything done. Even in the so-called conscious community, you got ego. You know, human frailties. I tell my young people, it's just human frailties. They're people just like everybody else. You know, we just have such a hard time being able to come together. Dr. John Henry Clark.
Yes, my man.
Told us as we sat at his feet, if you fail the plan, you plan to fail. I'd heard that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you plan your work, and then you work your plan. I heard that. Then the last one I hadn't heard. He said, you bury the man, and you follow the plan.
That's right.
So to me, that sounds like the plan is the most important thing. Stop looking for some messiah, some leader, and let's, you know, get a plan and follow that, and everybody do what they do best. Stay in your lane and don't worry about
it. And Dr. Clark also said, take a page out of the Japanese history. The only country that was bombed with a nuclear weapon, and now they the technical power of the world. And they didn't march. They didn't pounce their chests or raise their fists in their hands. They met in bathrooms, and they planned. They wrote a plan. With this generation dialogue, you go from chapter 1 to chapter 2. With that generation dialogue, you go from chapter 2 to chapter 3.
Yeah, he did. He said that all they had was a wheelbarrow at the turn of the century. And look at them. They're not smarter than anybody else. We invented mathematics.
Let me ask you something, Brother Bruce. Let me ask you something. You said not only do young males need rites of passage, you need adult men to go through rites of passage. Before I ask the part two question, my part one of this part two question is, how can we get brothers off the corners and young boys out the gang to listen or partake in solving issues in our communities and use this as a vehicle?
Well, if you want to get them to listen, then what's that mean? That means you better start writing. Yeah, that means if you want them to listen to any message, then you got to come to them the way messages come to them, and that's on this electronic stuff with music and videos and stuff like that. When I went to Egypt in 2001 with Tony Browder, there was a gentleman on the trip who was a retired research chemist, a professor at Howard. And we called him the digital doctor because he had all the latest digital equipment, man. I mean, back before they had gigabytes, they only had whatever it was before gigabytes, little small bytes. And so he told me then, because I just bought a video camera, and he said, Kaka, he said, in the future, he said, this is the way we're going to have to reach our children. This is the way we're going to have to educate our people. Now, this was in 2001. So 2011, Hidden Colors drops. And that's exactly what the doctor was telling me. So I bought two copies and immediately sent him one. I said, Doc, this is just what you told me in 2001. This is it right here. Hidden Colors. Despite the fact of who did it, and I've heard a lot of different things about him, it's still, like I said, coined the phrase, Hidden Colors did for black history and African history what Tiger Woods did for golf.
Right.
He brought people to the golf who never watched golf before. He was just so great that they knew they were watching a once-in-a-lifetime athlete, whether he was Tink or whatever. People who were drawn to the game. And that's the way Hidden Colors thrived. If you were to take a script of Hidden Colors and put it in the book, you wouldn't get one-tenth of the people to read it who actually saw it. No advertisements, no commercials. And when Hidden Colors first came out, I tried to get it on Amazon. It was sold out with no advertising. So when that thing hit, that's just what Tiger did. It drew people to African history. If you gave them a book, they wouldn't read it, but you'll sit and watch a video. See what I mean? So when you say how we get to them, that's how we got to get to them, with the message. And now with the Internet, you don't even need a record company. I bought some electronic equipment, and these people will do a DVD, I mean a CD for you with the package, like 1,000 of them for $800. Now, you got to market them, but that's what the Internet's for. You don't need a record company. If you want to reach them, you can mass produce these things. And distribution is the toughest part. But the Internet is worldwide. You come on with some flashy video or get some athlete to, you know, like Shaq to hook up with Foo Schnickens or something and, you know, get people to watch. And, like, who was that? The dude that was selling Master P, selling cassettes out of the back of his car. Check this out. There was a guy from Pittsburgh. His name was Method Man.
Yeah.
Method. You hit the Method Man?
Uh-huh.
No, not Method
Man. Method Man was out of New York.
That's out of New York. What's this funny thing? He wound up being the guy that made the beats for Jay-Z. There were two guys from Pittsburgh that were out there working on the Chronic and all that stuff. Sam Snead is one of them, and this other brother. I can't remember his name, but he was from the Hill District, where Marcus Wilson was from, and I used to buy his cassettes off of him, just like Master P. He said, yeah, brother, check this out, man. This is me rapping. So, you know, $5 out, support him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wound up making the beats for Jay-Z. But
Freeway?
That's how we're going to have to get to them. If you lay some funky beats down, it don't matter what you're saying. And they're going to absorb it, and they're going to walk around saying it. Like when I came up, it was, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. You know
but
what I'm
see,
saying?
Hip-hop is not like that no more.
Yeah,
hip-hop
I'm saying, but that's the way we got to hit them. Like you want to get to them, you got to reach them that way. You know? That's the venue if you want to get to them. Now, the message that you send, you know, now that's another thing. But the venue, we have to use the media. We have to use these modern electronics because that's what they do. I don't use all that much, but, you know, that's if you want to reach the young people. Now, getting these guys off the corner, homie, we got to face the facts. A lot of them ain't coming off of there. Sorry. You know, they just don't have they wouldn't function any other way. You know, I got relatives like that, so I ain't trying to put nobody down. You know, I got two just got out, so, you know, it's affected us all. All this opioid stuff, I went through that in the 60s. When my uncle was a heroin addict. We went through that a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, you know, this is new.
Yeah, I want to come back to that heroin thing. It surprised me how they said, oh, heroin is an epidemic now. I remember I was 9, 10 years old. Heroin was in the epidemic in the black community, and we didn't get no international exposure. But I want to go to the curriculum. I want to go back to what type of topics that you discuss in your curriculum.
Okay, now let's back up. I want to go back to these pennies. Because these pennies, like I told you, everything we did, we tried to inculcate different ideals and values, morals to our young men. And we told the parents, like if somebody wanted their kid to come, we went on a home visit. We went out to the house. We had a survey that part of it was Jawanda Kunjuthu's, and some of it was questions we made up. And we gave the survey to the young man, told him to go upstairs while I talked to his mom and or his parents. 9 times out of 10, it was his mom. And we went over the program, and we told him this is a manhood training program. It's not after school. You know, you don't want him hollered at or whatever, you just keep him at home. Because, you know, that might happen. You know, that's not what we do on a regular basis, but, hey, we might have to get on him sometimes. If you don't want that to happen, if he's that sensitive, then don't bring him here.
Right.
We let him know that we had an application. We got all the information. Then we had an agreement that the parents signed, and when the young man came downstairs, he had to read and sign. Okay? And then I gave a cursory look at his questionnaire. We asked a lot of different things. Like I said, a lot of it was Juwanda Kanjuku's work, but we also asked them, what's your favorite television show? Who's your favorite athlete? What sports you like the most? What's your favorite subject in class? You know, if you had $1 million, what's the first three things you would do? If you could be anybody you wanted to be, who would you be? And you know, some guy wrote, I want to be a Japanese anime artist. He didn't want to be a Japanese anime artist. He wanted to be Japanese. He didn't want to be himself. You know, that's why we put some of these questions in there. Okay? So we give them the survey. They go upstairs. Sometime we go over it. They sign everything. Then we told them they can bring them. And we told them what our policy is about, you know, what you can wear, what you can't, and how they had to bring their pennies. So then they would show up. The parent was, and some parents stayed through the academics, stayed through the whole thing. After a while, the parents didn't stick around. But, you know, when they first came, because this was new, and it was new to us too, so they would stick around. So after they started, like I said, with the pennies. Now, here's where I got this idea. I was single. I had an office water bottle. So as I came home at night, I would throw the pennies, you know, out of your pocket in there. So then I said, well, I'm going to get some pennies. Every payday, I got $5, just $5 worth of pennies. So the lady knew every time I got paid, I got $5. Over an 8-year period, I filled up 8 office water bottles with pennies. So when I came to my senses and decided to get married, I went to pick out a ring with my wife, my fiance at the time. I told her, get whatever you want. 10 years from now, I don't want to hear nothing about, well, you wouldn't let me get whatever you want. So she got what she wanted. I said, that's all you want? Yeah, I don't want nothing real big. I just want this. I'm like, okay. Now, this was in the 90s, early 90s. So I went home, and I started dumping those pennies out, putting them in a like a burlap sack, a canvas sack from the bank. Mm-hmm. And I would take them to the bank every day. I'd take 2 or 3 of these things. And when I'd go at lunchtime, they'd give me the money. So the lady, I made a $78 deposit on the ring, and the lady said, well, you will get your book in the mail for your payment. Before I got the book, I had paid off the ring with the penny. Each jar is $275 times 8. You do the math.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, this is a nice car set. So like I said, I would have the smallest kid in there put the penny on his baby finger. What can you buy with it? Nothing. What's it worth? Nothing. Who's it look like? Us. Oh, okay. Now, bring your pennies in and drop them in the jar. Each one of those pennies represents you, me, your mother, your sister, the people you go to school with, the people who look like us. So each one of those pennies is one of us. Now, that jar will get filled when each one of you do your job. Don't worry about Jamal's not bringing his. You just bring yours. You do your job. Stay in your lane. It's your responsibility, because if you don't bring them, you got to stand up till I tell you you can sit down. And you got to stand up straight and tall as long as I tell you to, because you're supposed to bring your pennies. Everybody else is. They're doing their job. You're the only one not doing it now. So, you know, we work with them like that. Okay? So now, you can actually see the pennies physically grow. Now, after you get about 3 or 4 inches, when a new kid comes in, I say, go over there and try to pick that penny jar up. You can't pick it up. Individually, a penny on a baby finger is nothing, but your strength in numbers. You get that jar 3/4 filled, most grown men can't pick it up. I tell them, go over there and try to pick it up. That shows you there's power in numbers. Plus, when you cash them all in, you got $275. So you're saving money. You're learning how to be responsible. You can actually physically see the pennies grow till the thing gets filled. We filled up, I can't remember how many jars. And then other people who supported us, like I told them, people who didn't even know us, would come by and bring their pennies. I'm talking about adults. Oh, yeah, we see what you guys are doing with the kids. Here's some pennies we've been saving. And I bring the bag in and say, see, here's another example. Brother Jackson gave me these pennies to give to you. You never seen him. He wouldn't know you if you were standing in front of him and vice versa. But you guys are striving to do the right thing. So here, bam, put these pennies in the jar. We filled up, I can't remember how many jars, because we ran this program for 9 years out of our pockets. We didn't have no grants. We didn't have no loans. Our kids don't need money. They need us. They need our time. They need our concern, our love. Money's not there, and I don't need no $50,000 to run a program. Oh, we got a summer program, you know. We need 50 grand to run this thing to pay the people. Everybody was a volunteer. All the brothers and the sisters and the speakers who came in were volunteers. A new kid would come in. We'd have him go up to the podium, stand up straight, stand up tall, tell us who you are, hold your head up, and tell us who you are, where you're from, blah, blah, blah. And they'd do that. And then we said, okay, the young men are going to ask you questions. They will raise their hand. You will point to them, and they will ask you a question. So one of the elders, he's a combat Vietnam vet, Marine, he would always ask, which direction does the Nile flow? That was like his pet question. He would always, after the kids asked the question, he would always ask that. So like I told you, after a while, the kids police themselves. So after a while, one of the kids would ask that question. So Brother Monterey wouldn't even have to ask that question anymore. One of them, always a different one, would ask him, which direction does the Nile flow? Then after they answer all the questions, we told them, everybody get up, let him know he's welcome here. So each one of us, all the kids and all of us, we get up and embrace him, let him know he's welcome here. All right, now sit down and let's get busy on his academics.
What I found was
using, like you told me, how we're going to get to him. What I did was use video as the teaching tool. Now, when I was growing up, when we watched movies, we'd go in the back of the room and go to sleep. Half the time, it was hard staying awake because they cut the lights out. Like, wow, that helps to stay awake. But anyway, VHS tapes. They didn't have CDs then. We had a television. The Prince Hall Masons it wasn't them. It was a foundation here in Pittsburgh. There's probably no more than 10 black foundations in this country. And here in Pittsburgh, we have one called the Poise Foundation, which was founded by a combat Korean Marine from the projects who founded an investment group who wound up turning into a foundation, which, like I said, there's only very few of them in the United States. But they gave us $1,500, and we used it to buy a television. 32-inch TV was like $800. That was a steal.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought the VHS machine and went up to the cooperative high school, and they made a cabinet for us, custom-made cabinet that we had made with the money they gave us. And the Prince Hall Masons, after we had to move to a bigger location, they allowed us to use the space and their people. Now, I was paying $20 a week. Like I said, out of my pocket. Every time we met, I would give the guy $20. The guy that was managing the building. Well, when the women, I guess the Eastern Star who meet in the building, when they found out what we were doing downstairs and they found out they were making us pay, they got on them. So the next week I came in there and I was trying to hand the guy the $20. He said, oh, no, Mr. Barnes, you don't have to pay. The women got on them and said, look, they're down there working with these young men and y'all charging them? So we didn't have to pay. See, people you don't even know will help you out.
The sisters again, out in front. The sisters again, out in front.
Yeah. When people you don't even know will come to your aid, just like we tell the kids, if you strive to do the right thing.
Let me
tell you about the video, but you asked me about, and this ties into it. So what we did was we passed out a pad and a pencil, and we told them, give us 10 things that you either did not know or 10 things you thought were interesting about the video that we're going to about to watch. And so afterwards, we would go around the room, and I would say, okay, Jamal, give me one thing off of your list. And he'd say something, and I'd ask, well, what do you think about that? Why? Blah, blah, blah. And then we go around the room. So we use that as a teaching tool. Okay? Now, the pad stayed with us. You never got to take them home. And we would look them over and always, you know, look and see what they were saying and see where they're coming from, where their head is at. So I was asked to teach a African history class with these young brothers who had fathers in the projects. They had a young father program. Now, I'm talking, these are straight up guys, 18 to 25, most of them street guys, most of them, vast majority. So anyway, I tried the same thing with them. I said, let me use this because it works so well with the kids. I said, let me use this with them because I know, you know, half of them can't read. Now, I'm just being real. You know, so we ain't even going to try to go there. So I told them, they said, well, what do you need, Kaka? I said, I just need a video and a VHS. So I got that, and I started showing programs. A lot of them from Lister Velt Middleton out of South Carolina Educational Television, where he interviewed all the great master teachers, Doc Ben, Ivan Van Sertima. So we're showing different things. So I'm using that, and these guys are sitting there playing cards, half sleep. You know, they ain't writing nothing on their pads. I'm like, man. So I started to give up after 2 or 3 weeks. They wasn't paying attention. And I was like, man, I said, nah, I'm going to keep going. So I kept showing the different videos. Now, the program manager set up a field trip with us to go to the Carnegie Museum. They have an Egyptian exhibit there. Matter of fact, they have what's called the Carnegie Boat, which is only one of three surviving Egyptian boats in the world. It's right here in Pittsburgh. Andrew Carnegie Museum dug it up and brought it. That's when you could bring things out of Egypt. You can't do that anymore. So we go down to the museum, and they had a program for us. They had some docents, you know, people that had worked there like 20-something years, these two elder European women. And they were nice, and, you know, we came in and sat down, and they had a slide presentation. So they started showing the slides, and she showed one slide. What's that? You know, and I didn't say anything. I was waiting to see if any of them were going to say anything, and they answered the question. Then she showed another slide. Anybody know what this is? I'm paused. Somebody else answered the question. She goes on, and the more she went, every single question was answered by these hoodlums. I'm like, now these hoodlums, but these are my hoodlums. And, man, my chest was sticking out so far, I didn't have to say anything. They had 30 different slides, and they responded to every one of them. And so afterwards, the lady said, where are you guys from? And the guy said, well, we're from the Young Fathers Program. She said, I've been doing this 25 years, and you guys are the most knowledgeable group that's ever come in here. And here, I didn't think they were paying attention. I didn't think they were listening. Back to playing cards. I mean, for real. But the more and more they kept answering the question, my chest stuck out so far, I couldn't get out the door. I was so proud of them, dude.
Why don't you give your information out to people that might want, that might be interested in starting a similar program?
Oh, we got some callers. Anybody call in or what?
Yeah. I was just waiting for you to take the call.
I got no info to give out. I was just
waiting for you to take a pause.
I know, man. I'm on a roll, man. But
this is Black Urban America. Do you have a question or comment? 8330. Guess not.
Okay, next.
This is Black Urban America, 9183. Do you have a question or comment? Hello? Guess not. They're just listening. Go ahead, brother. I'll just give your information there. Oh, this one from your area. This one from your area.
I think it's a post office box. I got to get one of them.
This is Black Urban America. Well, Brother Kaka, 4528, 412 area code. Do you have a question or comment? They just listen, brother. So go ahead and give your information now.
I told you I don't have any information. I got to get a post office box. I'm working on it. I just went down to apply for it today. The guy told me I'm going to have it Friday. You know, let me come back on and, you know, if anybody wants any of our information, like, let's see, we have an application, which application form. We have a survey, which is really good to see where the kid, where his head is and, you know, what he's thinking about. So we know where we need to work with him on, like the guy that want to be Japanese. I mean, you don't even want to be black.
We have a question. We have a call.
Uh-oh. I don't believe.
Hold on. Got to wait till this is Black Earth America, 2492. Do you have a question or comment for Brother Kakoff out of Pittsburgh?
Yeah, this is Derek Johnson calling from Atlanta, Georgia, by way of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kaka, we in here.
Yo,
what's up?
Big D.
What's up?
Black man.
Hey,
Black man.
Hey, man, listen, a couple things. First of all, the mailman, not Method Man. You embarrassing me. I thought I taught you about hip hop. You talking so much about knowledge yourself, man. You know what I'm saying? You ain't getting your Pittsburgh hip hop artists right, but no,
I'm
man.
Sorry.
I just want to comment.
Hey, you gotta remember now, D. You know I'm getting up there.
I know it's all right though. It's all right. And when you go, we're gonna get the plan when you go too, right? But no, I just want to comment and real quickly just say, you know, to everybody listening, I was very, very fortunate to come up through that Rites of Passage program, and it did so much more than you realize in terms of setting a foundation. It just gives you a different frame of consciousness when you are, you know, I mean, everything down to my college choices when I went to go play football to just, you know, I can't tell you how many different aspects of my life, you know, you see things through the lens that you should be looking at things. Taught you a lot about manhood. I work in financial services. I've been fortunate to manage a team of people with some of the biggest financial service companies in America. And, you know, one thing that's never escaped me when I'm working with my team and even when I'm working with some of the people that I've been fortunate to mentor, young people, goal, objective, mission, purpose. You know, that stuck with me, just, you know, having a plan. And, I mean, all that stuff has stayed with me. So, you know, just wanted to just chime in real quick. Kaka, I told you I would dial in and listen and hear what you got to say because you always dropping gems. And what's funny is, you know, I remember watching those VHSs. I remember the pennies. I remember my, you know, I'm still trying to get another Warrior shirt, hint, hint.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But the other thing is, even till this day, I still get DVDs in the mail. I still get DVDs in the mail. I'm still getting information sent to me no matter where I'm at. When I was in Philadelphia, I got it. When I was in Philly, when I moved to Atlanta, send me your address. I want to put some stuff in the mail. And I still get stuff all the time. And I use this stuff to teach my own children. You understand what I'm saying? So it's truly something that, like you said. Go ahead.
I'm in the ADL. I have to hook up one day.
Yeah, I have to get your math. I'm in. I live in Henry County, but you know, Atlanta. You get to wherever you got to get to. Especially if you're from up north, you ain't afraid to travel. You know what I'm saying? So we'll link up. But no, Kaka, I just had to chime in, man, and publicly salute you, man. I wish it was 10 million people on here listening, because like you said, and even this, you know, I'm working ministry now, very much focused on servanthood. And you said it early on. You were like, you know, we don't need leaders, we need workers. We need workers. Everybody wants to be in charge. Everybody wants to get credit, but nobody wants to do the work. You know what I'm saying? And, I mean, that's it. That's what we need. There's an absence of workers. There's an absence of people who are looking at things and not saying, you know what, there's something out here a lot bigger than me. You know, I need to do something and not be selfish about it. I have to have an agenda that's bigger than myself. So, you know, again, salute to you, Kaka. You know, you always my OG, man.
Well, D, now tell them what you're doing. You're married now. You're a husband.
Yeah, I'm
father.
Husband, father, you know, ministry, football coach, volunteer. I'm fortunate to be on a couple of boards in the community, one in Philadelphia, Founding Fathers, where we're teaching fathers how to be fathers. you know, a lot of single fathers out there. We were just, you know, just giving them some of the tools that they need to be effective fathers, to be effective, you know, leaders and be the men that their kids need to see them be. And here in Atlanta, very fortunate to be on the board of a company called Mountain Movers, Future Mountain Movers, with my boy Damon Blackman. So, you know, that's just another great organization where we're out here, you know, these organizations have shades of the Rites of Passage program that I went through. You know, and I volunteered once with them, came in, told them about what I did. And, you know, first thing I told them, I said, you know, a lot of people are going to come in here and tell you you can be anything you want to be. I'm going to tell you how to do it. You know, and I just gave them the real, you know. Mm-hmm. And from that, it just turned into something where I just felt compelled, you know what I mean, to really just give back and stay connected to that group. And like I said, I've been very, very fortunate, very blessed to be able to do so. And, you know, the one thing that you didn't tell me is, and you kind of shared it when you were talking about the story about the young brothers from the projects, is that I get so much more from the community, so much more from these kids, and I feel like I'm giving them. And that's real. You know what I'm saying? And it's the type of stuff that keeps you in the game. So, you know, when you talk about working, I mean, a lot of people, because there's not a lot of folks out here willing to do the work, people get burned out. Folks get burned out. They don't want to commit. And, you know, the old adage, they say that, you know, there's the same group of people doing all the work. It's the same group of people. And there's that burnout. But when you have people that are, you know, these young people just continuously just gracious, and, you know, you see them grow. You know, you get the grade reports back, and they went from a D to a B. You know what I'm saying? And you know, the mom's telling you, you know, he's listening in class now. Or, hey, you know what, he was having a problem in school. I told him I was going to call Coach Johnson. He snapped, you know, he straightened right up. I mean, that type of stuff, man, it makes it all worth it. You know, it really does. So.
And you can't buy that with money. See,
nope.
Now, Derek's mom is from Philly. She came to Pittsburgh to go to school and married and had two sons. And every time I see his mother, to this day, she tells me, you know, Copper, you saved my son's life. Every time I see her, I say, girl, you ain't got to tell me that. She said, no, I got to tell you that. Now, how long ago has that been? How old are you now, D?
39.
And this was back when you were what, 16, 17?
Oh, man, younger than that, because I was playing, we were playing basketball at the Y at Homewood.
Okay.
So I had to have been like 13, 14.
Every time I see her to this day, she still tells me that. But I just saw Alex today on my way home today, Alex Bray from McKee Sport. I still run into these gentlemen that are here in Pittsburgh, and they're so proud to introduce their wives, their girlfriends, and their kids to me. All of that, money can't buy that. Our kids don't need money. We can't throw money at the problem. Not our
I've got a minute left, and I just want to thank you, brothers, for coming on and sharing your experience, and I hope that other individuals and Brother Kaka, I am going to bring you back, and the one you mentor. So I really thank you guys for the work you're doing for our people, for the communities, and Kaka, and you've been doing this for a long time. So I really thank you for coming on the show. I got like 25 seconds. So
okay,
everybody, have a nice week. And again, keep up the great work. I will be in communication.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share our story.
No problem.
Not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and